From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
West Oakland.
Richmond, California.
I live in Oakland, California. How you doing?
Coming up, we'll see how a tour guide is trying to bring people together in one of San Francisco's most diverse neighborhoods.
There's a lot of commonality between the two cultures.
Then, two families' lives changed forever when one teenager set another on fire. We'll see where they are now.
When I asked, was it strange to be hugged by all these family members of the person who attacked you, Sasha just said, I'm always okay with hugs.
And we'll hear what it sounds like when you combine Oakland's politics with classic soul and hip-hop.
It's important for people to be able to groove to what is being said because it's speaking to you in a way that is more than just words alone.
Cross Currents is more than just words alone, so stay tuned. 68-year-old Oscar James grew up in the Bayview neighborhood in southeast San Francisco.
See that big tree right there? When they brought me home from the hospital, that's where we were living.
Now his old home is closed off by a chain-link fence.
All that dirt, you see that little laboratory right there? You see a road? All from that road all the way back used to be water. Okay?
So it's all fill.
James is telling reporter Kyungjin Lee about land just north of Yosemite Slough, a tiny channel between the Hunters Point Shipyard and Candlestick Park.
It's all filled, but it's filled with toxics. It's filled with barrels, and they would get the dirt from the ships and bury right there. That was the Navy's dump.
James shared his experience with a lot of other African Americans who lived in this neighborhood back then. That's one neighborhood history. Another one is about the area's many Chinese residents who have a long story of their own. That's exactly what Bayview community activist Eddie Zhang wants to highlight in a new tour he's designing to help the neighborhood's diverse residents get to know each other better. Reporter Kyungjin Lee takes the story from there.
On the other side of the shipyard is India Basin, where James points to an old, dilapidated building that's literally falling into the bay.
Right there is where we used to come down to get the shrimps, right in here, and buy them.
It used to be a restaurant where Chinese shrimp farmers sold their catch to the locals.
A big bag of shrimps would be like, I think, 15 cents a quarter. And we go back, my mother would make gumbo and jambalaya and different things like that out of it. But like I was saying, it was a lot of love in the community.
This is the kind of historic gem Eddie Zhang wants to share.
There's a really lack of understanding between the different subgroups about what's going on in each other's lives.
Zhang runs a multi-ethnic youth leadership program in the Bayview. Over the past few years, though, he's seen racial tensions build up between the established African-American community and the more recent Chinese immigrants. He says the Chinese
feel isolated. One of the bigger reasons also is because the fear of safety.
He helped a Chinese family move out of the neighborhood after they suffered multiple home invasions. And others expressed similar sentiments of wanting to relocate. At the same time, though, he says African Americans feel like they're being displaced by the influx of new development and new residents like the Chinese.
What I wanted to do is for the Chinese population to be able to learn about the history of African Americans, how they came over here, and then also learn about their own history, how their own people that came, when did they come, and why did they come over here.
So Zhang's starting with a history tour of the neighborhood geared towards monolingual Chinese immigrants. They make up almost 20% of the area's population. He's talking to people like Oscar James about one view of that history and artist Rennie Young about the other. Young is chronicling the history of Chinese shrimp fishermen.
Bayview Hunters Point had the largest group of these fishing camps. This is actually at Bayview at Hunters Point. This would be out on the deck where people were just drying the shrimp, the whole piles of shrimp.
When I meet her, she shows me some old photos of the shrimp camps. They were all over the Bay Area in the late 19th and early 20th century, until the Navy took over Hunters Point in 1938. Then
the health department actually came in and torched the remaining shrimp camps just to take them out of the environment entirely.
Young says no one really knows what happened to the Chinese shrimpers. One Chinese family ran a seafood restaurant until the early 60s, the same place Oscar James used to buy shrimp as a kid. Locals say back then, Bayview Hunters Point was a tight-knit community. Millions of African Americans were leaving the South, and many flocked to the neighborhood to work in the new shipyard. But in the mid-70s, the shipyard closed, jobs disappeared, and residents had to adjust, just as they had before.
One thing I want them to take away with is that there's a lot of commonality between the two cultures. Based on that commonality, we should grow from that.
So I brought more stuff. This is my last map, but you can have this one.
On a slow Sunday morning, Zhang meets with Tracy Zhu, another local activist. She grew up in the Bayview and is helping him plan the tour. Their first stop is at Heron's Head Park, a 22-acre wildlife habitat. Zhu plucks a leaf off a nearby tree and hands it to Zhang to try.
It's a medicine. What does it taste like? Just chew a little bit, yeah.
She wants to show examples of native habitat and how things used to look in San Francisco.
What does it taste like?
Zhang tries it and scrunches his face a bit.
If you chew enough of it, it makes your tongue numb. This is the original plant from which aspirin came from. There are strawberries, but you can smell that. That's a type of sage. There's a few types of sages around here.
Once they check out the site, they get back in the car and keep driving, making occasional stops. The hilltop, where Oscar James was born, the Oakdale Housing Project, to a tucked-away park you can easily miss.
So Adam Rogers Park is right here in this little pocket on Oakdale on this side, and then their garden is up at top, but you walk up these stairs.
There's a community garden up there?
There's a community garden managed by Hunters Point family for over 17 years. The Girls 2000 program.
Girls 2000 is run by Hunters Point Family, a community organization that primarily works with African American youth. Zhang wants to stop here to help newer Chinese residents understand what they have in common with their younger black neighbors.
The reason why we want to focus on a lot of farming is that because agriculture is one of the things that in China, agriculture is what's sustaining a lot of these people from the villages.
Takai Tyler is with the Hunters Point Family. She says this garden is a metaphor to connect the girls in the program to nature.
To have them be involved in this cycle of planting and caring and harvesting and then sharing with the community so that they could see how all that could also play out in their own lives.
For similar reasons, Tyler sees value in what Zhang is doing.
When new people come in, they don't understand the history. They don't understand the deep roots of the indigenous community. And so there's a feeling of disrespect that can result from that. Whenever you have community-wide efforts that bring people together on a regular basis, that promotes greater harmony in the community.
Back in the car, Eddie Zhang says that's exactly what he's trying to do for the immigrants he hopes will take the tour.
I mean, once they know the history of it and they know how the condition of the living spaces are and the dynamic in the community, hopefully they can be more sensitive to the change, be sensitive to the people that who live here, and to be more willing to take ownership of the community so where they can contribute in different ways.
See, that's the kind of cool thing about this neighborhood. Everywhere you go, you get a different view.
In Bayview Hunters Point, I'm Kyungjin Lee for Cross Currents.
That story is part of our Sights and Sounds of Bayview project, which shines a spotlight on one of San Francisco's most diverse neighborhoods. And this Friday night, you can hear those stories live for free. Stories, song, dance, all about the Bayview. This Friday, June 19th at the Joseph Lee Rec Center. More information is at kalw.org. Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Community building is a process. There's trust to earn, sometimes wounds to heal. Across the bay in Oakland, two families are trying to build their own connection after an incident on AC Transit. In November 2013, agender teenager Sasha Fleischman was riding the 57 bus home from school when teenager Richard Thomas set Fleischman's skirt on fire. Fleischman went to the hospital for 23 days. Thomas went to prison for 7 years. In a recent New York Times Magazine article, journalist Dashka Slater explores the lives and motivations of both these teenagers. She sat down with Leah Rose from the Upshot podcast to talk about her article, The Fire on the 57 Bus in Oakland.
So who is Sasha Fleischman and how did you hear about their story?
Sasha Fleischman is an 18-year-old agender teenager. Agender means that they, which is their preferred pronoun, they don't identify as either male or female. And so they consider themselves agender, or sometimes genderqueer is the term that they use.
So can you tell us exactly what happened on the bus that day?
So what happened on the bus that day was that Richard Thomas, who was a 16-year-old African-American kid from East Oakland, who attended Oakland High School, which is the high school very close to where Sasha and I both live, was traveling home from school with two friends, actually a cousin and a friend of the cousins that they ran into on the bus. And what looks like happened is that the friend of Richard's cousin suggested that Richard light Sasha's skirt on fire as a prank. Sasha was asleep. The friend passed Richard a lighter, and Richard lit the skirt on fire. It exploded into flame. I mean, it went from 0 to 60 in the space of about 2 seconds. Sasha ended up with second and third degree burns that ran from the calf to the thigh.
Wow.
On both legs.
So did the boys take off, or what happened after the fire was put out?
The boys had already, Richard had already jumped off the bus. Richard lit the skirt and then jumped off right away. The idea being that the skirt was going to go out quickly and Richard would be long gone before anything happened.
What did you make of Richard's testimony to the Oakland PD officers after he was arrested for setting Sasha on fire? And what did he tell them?
Richard started out by saying that he was just a bystander. And it was only after he was shown the fact that they had a video recording of the event that he admitted that he had been the one who had set the fire. What Richard said to them was that it was he I don't know if he used the word prank, but he said, "I didn't know it was going to go up like this."
Right.
But he had already said to them that he didn't have any problem with gays or homosexuals, but that he himself was very homophobic, was the word he used. And that was the word that would appear in the charging documents.
There was a question when he was first charged with two felonies for the incident, that he was possibly going to be charged as an adult and he faced a possible lifetime sentence. And there were some people that you interviewed, including Sasha's parents, who felt that he should be tried as a juvenile. He was sentenced in the end to 7 years, and he's in an adult prison now?
No, he's still in the juvenile system. There are two hearings that he needs to have in order to determine whether his sentence will be reduced. He has had the first of those hearings and came through with flying colors. If he meets the benchmarks for the second hearing, his sentence will be reduced to 5 years. That will enable him to serve all of his time in juvenile facilities and not have to go to adult prison.
You talk about a really emotional exchange between Sasha and Richard's parents at one of the court hearings. What was it like when Richard's mom approached Sasha's mom?
Debbie and Carl, Sasha's parents, hadn't come to most of the court appearances. And so it was really their first time in the courtroom. And Jasmine, Richard's mother, saw them sitting with me and knew who they were. And so she came up and introduced herself and just said, "I'm so sorry." And these words just kind of tumbled out of, you know, I don't know what made him do that. That's not who we are. We're not hateful people. And then all of this was happening in the vestibule just outside the courtroom. And one by one, each member of Richard's family came forward and hugged Debbie and Carl and Sasha.
Oh, Sasha was there too.
Sasha was there as well.
So what was Sasha's reaction?
Sasha's reaction was just a smile and accept the hugs. And Sasha has this kind of zen quality at times. And when I asked them afterwards, you know, how was that for you to be, you know, was it strange to be hugged by all these family members of the person who attacked you? And Sasha just said, I'm always okay with hugs.
That's so sweet. So do you think that interaction changed the way Sasha's family thought about Richard and about the incident? Did it change the way that maybe they thought Richard should be punished for the incident?
Yeah, I don't know if it changed the way they thought about the punishment, because they had come out very early on saying that they didn't feel that Richard should be charged as an adult. Sasha's father is a kindergarten teacher. Sasha's mother works in at an independent school. There are people who are in education and feel very strongly, as I do, that children are not the same as adults. So they were very clear on that one. But I think having the personal contact did change the way that they felt. They could see that Jasmine, Richard's mother, really was genuinely sorry.
That's journalist Dashka Slater talking about her article, Fire on the 57 Bus in Oakland. That conversation is from the podcast The Upshot with Leah Rose, engineered by Justin Richmond. Find a link to Slater's article and subscribe to The Upshot at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Oakland is one of the most diverse cities in the entire country. People from all walks of life live side by side, making it a dynamic and sometimes divisive place to call home. It's a mix of cultures that's led to many political movements, from the Black Panthers to Occupy to recent Black Lives Matter protests. In this episode of Bay Area Beats, we meet the members of Antique Naked Soul, an Oakland band with a message that makes you move.
Ooh la la la, Antique's on the mic and she's doing her thing. Ooh la la la, it's the natural vibe that the naked soul bring. Ooh la 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 la, we swing.
You know you never heard this before.
So I am Antique and we are Antique Naked Soul. We are an all-vocal, I guess, beatboxing soul band.
So my name is Nigala McCoy, and I am on background vocals. I support.
My name is Jamie Brown. I am also on background vocals, and I'm also the music director.
Tommy Solati Shepherd. I do some of the bass lines and all the percussion.
So all the sounds that you hear are sounds that we're making with our voices only, and we do live looping on stage when we're building beats on stage during our performances.
Looping is a thing where you can record your voice. You can determine how long you want your voice to be recorded, and when you stop that, your voice starts over again with what you recorded, and it comes back around again and again and again. Now, every time it comes back around, you're able to record something else on top of that. That way you can build up full chords of music, or you can build up full drum sets of things, or full soundscapes of environments and things like that.
We can also
do vocal sort of impressions of instruments. We kind of simulate the sound of a band with just our voices alone.
See, support. Support.
It's kind of an illusion. We're not really trying to sound like these instruments. We're just placing notes where these instruments would be playing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you get it, and you wind up being fooled too.
A lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Actually.
I think somebody had asked Jamie, do you have the number to your drummer?
Yes.
Can I get it? And we were like, that's not drums, actually.
Yep. Just Tommy.
I can tell you right now, like the first thing I ever tried to beatbox, and I'll never forget it, was the Oscar Mayer Wiener commercial. It was like, and you know the rest thus far. Yeah, so you know, so I was doing that, and then I was doing like TV show themes like Gilligan's Island and like and Hawaii 5-0 and stuff like that, you know, just trying to, you know, like just trying to do that.
Part of what I think makes Antique Naked Soul so unique is that a lot of us, like three, four, we're all educators. We feel like we really understand the power of music, even just the scientific power of what it does for us and our brains and our mood and our emotions, and that and we can change the world with it. Also, just the preservation of culture. Hip hop has gotten so much more focused on just rap, and is so much more than that. Mm-hmm. And so being able to make sure that beatboxing is an art form that stays center is important to us too. Everywhere I've been in the world, hip hop has been like a catalyst, you know. It's been empowering to people in Cuba and Honduras and in Africa and all over the world. So there's something about it that's really special.
They're coming forth, better move out, fall back, take cover anywhere. You can't evade all that syntax, fire that, stop and frisk motions. The chemical catapulting explosions. My hoodies, I'm a hoof for real, fender boy, trying to build and rebuild. What you saying to the soil now? Who's with me? Who I'm up against? Who fucking up to Remy Khan on the lines of defense?
We won't march, we won't chant, we won't stand for your benign neglect.
We ain't taking it, we ain't taking no more, we ain't taking that.
We won't turn the other cheek,
come on,
cause what we seek is equality. Nah.
So that song was called Burn, it was written as a part of actually a theater piece that was inspired by Jeff Chang's book Can't Stop, Won't Stop. Based on what was going on nationally in the news, what was going on in Ferguson, what was going on in Baltimore, and really all over the country, Florida, Oakland, everywhere, knowing that there's been, you know, almost 400 police murders this year, and that we felt like we had to respond to that and say something about that.
No more death for the fires.
It's a lot of things, actually,
yeah.
to be honest. And I know we all feel it. We feel like so connected, but we also feel like we're preaching to a choir, like a very loud choir, but you know, it's still, we preach it to the choir.
See, the pretense is we don't want a home. In fact, we neglect the brim and jewelries on the thousand and the ride of the tech. If we don't see it in our eyes, I see it in our protest. If they don't hear it, then our words will understand the process of progress. We need water. Babylon is burning. It's broken glass, smoke and pee. Everywhere we're turning, we're God, no regret, no regret, no we're learning. No, I'm machine knowledge. Watch your back, we emerging.
Poverty is cruelty. You don't care. Forget humanity.
People get it. They get the song. They know exactly why it's being sang. They understand the words and they believe it themselves.
Any consequence? No.
Come on.
So give me an apocalypse and I would dance.
And I would dance, yeah.
Cause I keep democracy. It's the last chance.
I think something that music in general can do is, I mean, we could just be at a podium just shouting the messages that we have. We could just be, you know, just be preachers saying all of the messages that we have in our music. But I think it's important for people to be able to groove to what is being said as well, because it gets ingrained in you subconsciously, because you're feeling it in your body, you're feeling it not just what's being said, but movement to it as well. And then emotionally you're able to latch onto what's being said, because it's speaking to you in a way that is more than just words alone.
Clouds of pitch black smoke beginning to strangle. Oh, say, huh, can't you see the stars, man, go global? Warmer's about to take its turn on the planet, and damn it, ain't nobody even concerned. We seem too intent to hold on to what we learn. Even in oblivion, obviously, we never learn. We can have it all, y'all, only if we have the nerve. Operation demolition round the curve, let the spur ready burn.
That piece was produced by KALW's Julie Kane. You can hear Antique Naked Soul perform live at SoMarts in San Francisco on June 20th. All the details are at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. And if you've got an idea for a local musician we should talk with, email us at news@kalw.org or reach out on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Our team includes Lila Day, Audrey Dilling, Rachel Dornhelm, Marcy Fraser, Chris Hoff, Emma Nobel, Lizak Shallet, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Angela Johnston and Jeremy Dalmas line produced the show. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.